Now that we've moved Valley Edition to Friday, we figured it would be a good time to introduce the news team, whose award-winning features help make up the show's content. Today in our studio, moderator Kathleen Schock talks to reporters Carrie Klein, Laura Satsui, and Monica Velez about the process of finding and producing accurate and interesting stories.
So I'm really excited to draw back the curtain a little bit and take a look at how this team operates and how you go about bringing news to your listeners. So just to start out, a question I know you hear quite often, how do you find your stories?
So there are a lot of different ways, I think. The kind of the most straightforward ones are the stories that come to us. Like we're reading the news. We're reading all the time. We're checking social media for people locally, for things that are happening nationally that might have an effect locally. But also a lot of it is just organic conversations with people in the area here. And whether that's, you know, either, people kind of cold pitching us ideas, which happens with listeners, or maybe we'll already be out on an interview and they'll say some kind of comment that kind of sticks with you. One particular story that comes to mind is like, on Twitter, we happened to be seeing a conversation about Valley Fever, the fungal disease I cover a lot. And there was a woman who was talking about struggling with pregnancy and the Valley Fever medication. And that's not a story that I would have really heard anywhere else. It's very rare kind of to be in that situation. But because she was on Twitter and she tweeted at us, that turned into a great story after that.
That's great. Thanks, Carrie. Laura, I'm curious, how long does it take you to put together, let's say, a 5-minute feature story?
Yeah, those are the stories that we honestly, it seems like the shortest story, but it takes the longest time. And so I try to think of it in terms of working on it for a week, and like within a week, I will have all my interviews planned. I will be going through all of that tape and then writing up that script. So maybe, you know, Monday, start doing those interviews, and then by Friday, the story is done and aired. But at the same time, sometimes I get pitched a story or I find a story maybe 2 weeks out and then I'm thinking about it and making sort of preliminary phone calls. And that happens over the course of a week or two, something like that. It seems like it takes not a lot of time, but there's so much planning and just thinking about it. And even when I'm not at work, just ruminating on it. And maybe you guys can relate. You dream about it or you go to the gym and you're still thinking.
Totally. Yeah. It's on my mind all the time.
Monica, could you talk us through the process? When you come up with a great story idea, how do you internally decide, yes, this is something we're going to move forward with?
So one of the really big things that I always think about is what kind of communities and how many people do certain issues affect.
And I think at the same time, you mentioned communities being affected, but also stakeholders. We're always talking to who's involved in the process, who has something at stake. So it's often government, it's often community groups, it's often families, sort of in your immigration example. But like I did a story on liquor licenses, and it was a lot of community groups concerned about kids having or being in close proximity to alcohol if there are liquor stores near schools. And so being able to talk to families who lived near those liquor stores and in oversaturated areas, but also the council members who are voting on this. So I guess I always think about it in terms of, like Monica said, communities, but really stakeholders and people who you might not just run into and talk to about this.
And I would imagine Carrie, maybe you could comment on this. It's a collaborative process, yes? It's not just, I want to do this story and I'm doing this story.
No, definitely. We're always talking about this all together as a newsroom. We're meeting really regularly and talking about, you know, how do we balance being reactive to what's going on now and public affairs, current affairs, but also balancing that out with kind of the more, you know, maybe in-depth things that aren't quite as timely, but still really important. And then, of course, we also, in each show, at least every week on Valley Edition, we at least want to have something that's like that's lighthearted in some way and not necessarily so newsy. But yeah, we make a lot of these decisions together as a news team.
So this might sound like a silly question, but I think it's an important one for listeners to hear or for you to address. How do you go about ensuring that the information you report is accurate?
I think a lot of that comes down to trusting our sources and, being able to attribute that information to them. You know, we don't often report things anonymously. We ensure that if we do get an anonymous tip or something like that, we find someone who can say, yeah, I can vouch that this is true, or yeah, I'm a scientist and this is true. That's who I often rely on, people who will tie their name to it and say, yeah, I have experienced this for a fact. And that's why we often say such and such says. And if we can confirm it through, you know, some other report, like maybe it's printed out, it's a budget, and the numbers are there, then we know that's printed, it's been reported by a specific agency. So that's true. But usually it's just finding other people to confirm it and getting as many of those confirmations as possible, not just blatantly saying, well, I heard this through the grapevine. It's out there now.
Right. Because having factual information is so critical to your credibility as journalist. Monica, maybe you could talk a little bit about why it is so important to ensure your credibility in order to do your job.
Yeah, well, I mean, as reporters, your credibility is kind of all you have. It's really important to your reporting to always try to be as accurate as you can. And, you know, it's one of those things like, you know, we're only human. We make mistakes too. And the important part about making mistakes for us is that when we realize that we have made a mistake, we go to the story immediately, change it, and kind of make a little note that says, hey, like, we messed up on this. This is the right information.
If it's breaking news, we're trying to talk to people as fast as we can. And that's why we do update stories. And we also, you know, we want to get things right the first time, but we are responsive to when audience members or listeners come back to us and say, hey, I think that was wrong. And you know, we'll admit it if we can confirm otherwise, right?
But that doesn't happen very often, though.
Right, yeah.
But I will say, too, that I think that there's a misconception out there. A lot of people think that journalists go out there looking for one specific thing, that we already have a narrative in our head, and then we only look for those viewpoints
like
that support that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah. That's really not the way that this works. I mean, you know, if a story features maybe three voices or three interviews, those are generally not the only people that we've spoken with. We've done a lot of pre-interviewing too with lots of other, as Laura, you know, talked about, stakeholders to make sure that this is the story that really exists. This is at least, you know, the perspective that at least some people in the community feel. And so, you know, we're doing our best to represent that rather than invent it.
Great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Valley Edition. We're here talking with the members of the KVPR news team. Along these lines, and thank you, Carrie, for your comments. Laura, I'd like to switch the conversation to a specific story that mm-hmm. you wrote. So, you know, as a journalist, you are reporting on events in real time. And of course, we know the objective truth of a situation as defined by one person. Mm-hmm. It's not always the same as how it's defined by another person.
Sure.
So I'd like to talk about the steps that you have taken to represent all sides when reporting a story, specifically taking a look at a recent report that you did about a 2020 ballot initiative that could change some provisions of the what has been considered a very controversial Proposition 13.
Yeah, Prop 13. And so you know, what some people interpreted that what the effects of Prop 13 are and what repealing it or parts of it might mean. Yeah. So when I so kind of going back to how we find stories, the county assessor's office actually sort of pitched me that story. I got a phone call where they said, hey, we'd love to talk to you about this, or we want to kind of inform you about what we think is going on, how this might affect us. And at that point, I didn't know enough about the county assessor to even move anywhere forward with this story in particular. So I had a lot of conversations just figuring out, okay, what does a county assessor even do? What does this even mean? And then I had to go back and look at Prop 13, because that was the other side of it. And then I had to look at what this new ballot measure for 2020, which seems really far away, who the people were that even brought that forward. And then had a lot of conversations with our editor, Alice, about it. And when I wrote my first draft, you know, we realized that I had written something that was giving a lot of time to people who were against the 2020 ballot measure than people who are for it. And we had to go back and say, okay, why do I think that is? And I think because I had been pitched this story by one side, it kind of made it harder for me to start to think all the way around the issue, and I hadn't quite made my way to making all the phone calls I could have possibly made. And so I just had to go back to the drawing board a little bit and say, okay, who haven't I talked to? Who is still being affected? And then getting even more voices. And by the end, we tried to, you know, be as fair as we could and make sure, you know, like Carrie says, the people who are affected, that's their opinion, but get, you know, also asking them, like, well, what are you hearing from other people as well?
It's a great example of the importance of collaboration in order to ensure you can present stories as objectively and in an unbiased manner.
Right. Yeah. I couldn't write this story if I didn't have Alice to edit it, or if I didn't have my coworkers to bounce ideas off of and say, hey, does this sound okay, or something like that.
So, Monica, you recently reported a really fascinating story out of Bakersfield about a priest who was accused of sexual abuse. And there was a lot of tension in terms of how the community was reacting to those allegations. Can you tell us a little bit about what drew you to that story and the approach that you took in terms of getting both sides of that controversial situation?
So for this story, to me, what kind of stood out about it? Well, one, you know, it was being reported by various outlets. But the one thing that was really interesting to me was there's this longtime priest in the community that is very well loved by a lot of people, has helped a lot of people. And he was being accused of some, you know, really terrible things. And there was just an overwhelming support. Like, I'm talking hundreds of people who showed up to really rally for him and kind of say, no, like, we don't believe these accusations. This priest would never do that. And so the way that I approached it was I really looked at how this can impact a community. A lot of people not believing someone who was allegedly a victim of some, you know, of some sexual abuse. And to give this perspective, I also talked to a professor at Stanford, and he has been looking into research about sexual abuse by priests specifically for 30 years plus. And so he was able to really give this story a perspective, kind of, you know, a researcher and an unbiased kind of look at the situation. So that brought a lot of insight into the story as well.
That's great. So before we wrap up this conversation, I want to talk to you, Carrie, specifically about a series of reports that you have done recently called In Recovery, about opioid use in the San Joaquin Valley. As listeners of the show, I'm sure, know, the series is supported by a 2018 data fellowship from the USC Center for Health Journalism. Can you just briefly explain what that means for listeners?
There's a department down at USC which is all about health journalism, and the majority of what they do is support reporters in California and around the country to do really important, impactful health reporting. And so this is a fellowship where they bring me in for a week to do some professional development. We learn about data analysis. We learn about kind of the important health topics that are out there. We network with other journalists, and they give us a small stipend also to go and report kind of a big in-depth series for about 6 months was the amount of time that I had.
That's great. So tell me a little bit more specifically about the story you did for that series on Oildale. What I found really interesting about it is that it demonstrated the complexity and the ambiguity associated with reporting on a public health issue of this magnitude. I mean, you even at one point posed the question, is the problem getting better or worse? And I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about your approach for tackling something this complicated and massive?
Yeah, this was a really tough story to produce because, you know, what I think really the impetus for it was, you know, again, this data fellowship, I was producing a whole series of stories about opioid use and abuse. And part of that is when I was going around and talking with lots of people, I just started by fanning out, just calling people up, health officials, community members, you know, people in treatment or counselors, and just saying, what are the stories here I should be looking at? And people kept over and over telling me, oh, Oildale, you should be looking at Oildale, especially if I'm talking about Kern County. Oh, yeah, Oildale, lots of drugs there. And people are really kind of flippant with that kind of, you know, the reputation that Oildale has as of being this kind of drug center. And so it was fascinating from that point. But then, you know, you dig into the state has a wealth of data on opioid overdoses and who's affected. And, you know, I noticed that in the span of 1 year, the number of deaths, of overdose deaths due to opioids in Oildale dropped precipitously. I think it was from 16 deaths 1 year to 3 the next. And that really piqued my curiosity, because it was like, this is a tremendous drop. You know, was it just a fluke, or is it something that actually is part of a trend? And so that was what was really the seed for the story. You know, and there are tons of caveats, as you said. I mean, it's a hard question to answer, and I didn't try to answer it and myself become the expert there to answer it. But I presented all sides, and I really focused on what community members there are seeing. when the experts aren't sure, they're not sure what to do with the data, you know, I basically found other experts, which is the people who actually live there and do community work there. And they were able to tell me what they were seeing. And yes, this still is a tremendous problem, but there's a lot of hope in that community. And, you know, a lot of the community advocates feel like there is improvement. And so, you know, that's a story in and of itself, whether or not the data actually shows that.
Well, that's an optimistic note to end on. I want to thank you all for taking the time. And obviously, you are very busy, so we'll let you get back to work.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Thanks.